should be taken off the airwaves. That's it. I'm phoning the FCC.
The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Curtis Subaru Studio. Welcome. Welcome to our top stories this hour. I must comment on CBS News that we just carried. Just because, you know, I like to offer balance to things. But, you know, they've been appropriately lauding, and the funeral was today for, you know, a human rights lion, John Lewis. And, you know, say wonderful things about him, and rightly so. And then they go to the story of Herm Cain, a former presidential candidate, Herm Cain. And all they could say about his life is that he contracted COVID-19 after attending a Trump rally last month. To reduce the life of this extraordinary man, Herm Cain, first of all, there's absolutely zero evidence that he got coronavirus at that rally. He tested positive, I think, a week or two after the rally. He might have, but there's no proof of that whatsoever. And in choosing to cite that as the summation of his life in the CBS story there, they are totally ignoring that Herm Cain was the consummate American dream story. A black man in America who was born dirt poor, who also faced incredible discrimination, successfully battled stage 4 cancer. He became CEO of Godfather Pizza. And again, at a time when African Americans weren't exactly being handed CEO positions in America, but because of his brilliance, because of his determination, his work ethic, he becomes the CEO. He chaired a Federal Reserve Bank. He was an advisor to presidential campaigns. He ran for president himself. And all CBS says is he contracted coronavirus after attending a Trump rally. Way to diminish the accomplishments of an absolutely phenomenal American. A black man who overcame unbelievable adversity to become a role model for so many of us. And, you know, should have and could have been a role model for millions and millions more, but because he had conservative viewpoints, his life story was not shared with young people in America. He wasn't hailed for having overcome destitution and racism and systemic corporate ceilings for black people. Herm Cain's an American hero. And all anybody listening until I opened my yap a couple of minutes ago, all anybody listening would have known is, oh, he ran for president, he got COVID-19 after attending a Trump rally. And the subtext of that is, it serves him right. Went to a Trump rally, got what he deserved. And every picture that I've seen of him on so many websites today is a picture of him at the Trump rally. Because, again, it's about, yeah, he did what he shouldn't have done. So when I talk about the mandated groupthink, which I did extensively at the beginning of the show today, a couple of hours ago. You have to look at how it's embedded. You have to look at how it's so carefully constructed that this man, because he was conservative, it's almost like it's a big joke. So we have two stories in the news today. Deaths of great Americans, both of whom, it's not incidental. I was going to say happen to be black, but it's not incidental to their life stories. John Lewis and Herm Cain. John Lewis is being rightly celebrated. He endured beatings and, you know, unbelievable torture in his pursuit of civil rights. He's a great American. Herm Cain did the same thing. He died because he attended a Trump rally. So when I talk about how embedded bias is, that's a classic example right there. And my apologies to our network, CBS. But I thought they were going to say something positive about his life when I heard that story. My jaw dropped when their summation of Herm Cain was done at a Trump rally and died. Okay, let's see. I got a couple other things. I was talking about Anthony Fauci, who is becoming more resolute about no kids in school. I'm still not seeing any science to back that up. Are you ready for this? Not only are you wearing masks when you go outside or into businesses, are you ready to wear goggles when you go out?
You have mucosa in the nose, mucosa in the mouth, but you also have mucosa in the eye. And that's one of the things that, you know, theoretically, you should protect all the mucosal surfaces. So if you have goggles or an eye shield, you should use it. I mean, it's not universally recommended, but if you really want to be complete, you should probably use it if you can.
Is this what's next? Is that going to be mandated next? Going to have to wear goggles? I went to the grocery store yesterday, and I wear the mask. I'm very respectful of businesses and their policies. I wear the mask not because of government edict. I wear the mask because private businesses are required to ask customers to do that. And I do it out of respect for them because I don't have to patronize any business. I could go elsewhere, although nobody's allowed to have customers without a mask in our state right now. But I do it because I respect private business. I don't do it because of government edict. But are goggles going to be next? What are the surfaces? Mucosal? Let me see. I got to hear. I learned a new word. I got to hear it one more time.
You have mucosa in the nose.
Mucosarin? I don't know. Anyway, it's mucus stuff. And so the eyes can now contract the COVID-19. So we're going to wear goggles now. I'm going to pass. I'll just tell you right now. I'm going to pass on the goggles. Mine will get all fogged up. Unless, I haven't skied since I was in my 20s. But back then, all the rage was the goggles that had a little battery in them that ran a fan so they wouldn't get fogged up. Do they still have those? Seriously, I haven't gone skiing for 30 years. I'm thinking about taking it back up. That's a whole other story. I was just telling my wife, my middle daughter. You want me to go off on a tangent? I'll go off on a tangent here. We were a basketball family. All my girls played. I coached forever. It's a winter sport. And a lot of our weekends were taken up with basketball. And it provided some of my greatest life memories of all time. I do have some regrets. because my wife and all three girls are tennis players, and it's a lifetime sport. And when we go on vacation, they all go out and play tennis, and I do too. I'm a serviceable tennis player. I was a 3-0 when I played USTA. Not any good at all, but I was fairly athletic, so I could chase down everything. But I love my wife and girls. They will still go out and hit tennis. So, you know, girls will come out to the house and they'll make a tennis playing date. And while I could never replace the life memories that basketball provided, I sure wish that we had been a skiing family. Although I'd be bankrupt trying to outfit and buy lift tickets for three kids. But just having that lifetime sport and things that, you know, my girls don't play basketball anymore, but they could still be skiers. My middle daughter took it up a few years ago, and I'm thinking I might get back to it just so I can, you know, have a great excuse to go up to the mountains with her. But, you know, you make these decisions as young families, and you never think about the, you know, lifetime impact that has. But lifetime sports, huge believer in that. Okay, that's all a huge digression. Donald Trump, he's going to have a press conference coming up. So is Jay Inslee. We're going to monitor both of them. We'll pull cuts. We'll share anything newsworthy that comes out of both the Trump and Inslee news conferences. They're both going to start soon. 2:30 is the expected start time for both of those. The president today, everybody went berserk because he on Twitter said, you know, something about mail-in voting fraud and the question, should we delay the elections until it's safe to go vote in person? While I was just somewhat critical of CBS in their top of the hour news, I also want to praise CBS News, because they ran a story in Philadelphia, and it's the network, but it was set in Philadelphia, where they did a test on mail-in voting, and shockingly, CBS's conclusion was, it's going to have some tremendous flaws for us as a nation.
A record number of Americans are expected to mail in their votes this November because of the pandemic. But when you send in your ballot, what are the odds it will actually count? CBS This Morning's Tony DeCoppo put the Postal Service to the test.
If you know how to mail a letter, you already know how to mail in your vote.
How you doing?
But how long might it take for that vote to actually arrive and be counted?
Have a good afternoon.
We decided to test it, sending 100 mock ballots simulating 100 voters from locations all across Philadelphia to a P.O. box we set up to represent a local election office. In the following week, we checked our P.O. box for the results.
Mail pickup notice, there's more.
When we went to collect everything, though,
nothing.
Most of our votes seem to be lost.
That's all I have back there right now.
You're sure? You're totally sure? I believe you.
All right, then. Have a good day.
21% of our votes hadn't materialized after 4 days.
So of our 100 ballots, 97 arrived, which sounds pretty good, unless you consider the fact that that means three people who tried to vote by mail in our mock election were in fact disenfranchised by mail.
In a close election, 3% could be pivotal, especially in what's expected to be a record year for mail-in voting.
Hey, congratulations to CBS for questioning the accuracy of mail-in voting. And so in that test that they executed, 3% of the votes never arrived or never somehow got counted. And if that's just a random test that CBS did on a random week in the summer in Philadelphia, is there potential for shenanigans? I remain convinced, and the political event that more than any informed my skepticism of government and politics is 2004 in our state, when I continue to believe, and certainly the facts back me up, that King County elections stole our state's gubernatorial race. Dino Rossi won the first K count over Chris Gregoire. It was close. Mandatory recount. Dino Rossi wins the recount. And then King County Elections finds a bunch of Gregoire ballots. And on the second recount, Chris Gregoire becomes governor of our state. No one will ever convince me. If you don't know about this, go back and research the 2004 Washington gubernatorial election, when an election was quite plainly stolen. And I covered that story extensively on this show. Jeez, 16 years ago that was. My goodness. But I have seen an election get stolen in our state. And now 16 years later, CBS says that 3% of voters would be, in their test, disenfranchised because of mail-in voting. Yeah, I consider that to be disturbing. Whew. That's a lot of prelude. Have I even gotten to the... Sean, have I done the big lead yet?
No, this is all a preamble.
That was bonus?
No, yeah.
It was mere prelude.
Mere prelude. Not That's preamble. Right, Dory.
Mere prelude.
That's right.
And bonus material, because I think I'm going to have to do some of my big lead stuff in the next segment now. But look at all the stuff you learned. You learned about Herm Cain. Oh, that's why. I didn't know I was going to talk about that. I hear something on CBS News and it sets me off. But just remember, John Lewis was a great American. So was Herm Cain. And they should get somewhat equal treatment. So you learned about Herm Cain. You learned that I'm not going to wear goggles. You learned that that I wish I'd kept on skiing. And you learned that even CBS News is saying there's going to be some voter disenfranchisement by mail-in. And if you're fairly new to the state, you learned that the 2004 gubernatorial election was absolutely stolen by politics. King County elections. Okay, so that's all bonus material. I'm going to slide some big lead into the next segment, and we'll check the news for you. And then the Dory Monson Show will roll on. Dory Monson Show rolls on. In a little bit, I'll play you a couple of clips from my interview with John Cleese a couple of hours ago. That was really fun. Man, I'd like to be that sharp at my age, at 58, to be that sharp at 80. I really love talking with him, so I'll get to that. We do have some other news that I didn't quite get to in the big lead. More protests are planned in Seattle tonight. Last night, we're getting reports that a citizen was attacked for trying to video record a march going by their house. And we're starting to get a better idea of the violence, just the sheer level of violence attached to the peaceful protests in Seattle. Carmen Best, Jenny Durkin, Seattle Bomb Squad, they had a press conference yesterday. At the rioting in Seattle on Saturday, they found a van, and inside the van were improvised explosive devices, improvised spike strips that presumably could have been used against police cars responding to some criminal activity. Bear spray was in this van, and they say that they were passing all of these items out of the van to the peaceful protesters. Bear spray it's a serious crime if you use it against a human being. It is far more powerful than the pepper spray that cops were using last at the riots. And here's Carmen Best, Seattle Police Chief, who says that, you know, we've got to stop the pretense when they're passing out these violent weapons, potentially deadly weapons, we've got to stop the false narrative that these are just peaceful protests.
Peaceful protesters do not show up with a van full of bear spray, stun guns, spike strips, and explosives.
Oh, yeah, there's stun guns, too, in this van. Here's a member of the bomb squad.
Caused by these pyrotechnic explosives that they are taping together, taping the fuses together, and increasing the amount of explosion fourfold easily.
So it could kill a cop. Last Saturday, it sent a cop to the hospital, one of these IEDs, when thrown at a police officer. 59 police officers were injured in the Saturday rioting. Businesses had windows smashed. There was looting once again. Arson that did maybe close to $1 million of damage at the construction site of the Juvenile Justice Center. And Jenny Durkin also talked about some of the strategies that they're using.
But they train and practice on what they call de-arrest, so that if an individual is arrested by the police, a number of people will swarm and try to pull that person away from them.
So they are very well trained. And this is not some organic event. That's what people have to understand. And after you hear about them passing explosives and bear spray and stun guns out of a van, the narrative that these are peaceful protests, and again, at their best, there's a 100% certainty that they are chanting, bleep the police, all cops are B-words, you know, kind of language we could never, ever utter on the radio. There's a 100% certainty that these hateful chants are going to emanate through the streets of our region at these peaceful protests. Kill the police, routinely chanted. And even if you don't smash the shop window or set the fire, I don't know how people who chant kill the police can be labeled peaceful protesters. Q13 talked to Dave Reichert, former King County Sheriff, former U.S. Congressman. And Dave Reichert had some very interesting things to say about our lack of political leadership.
The mayor, the governor, our county prosecutor in King County, they all took that oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States of America. They aren't doing that.
And so we're not upholding the Constitution. Our politicians are not. They still won't allow people to gather in a church for a religious service, which is protected by the First Amendment, but they allow thousands of people to march and riot because the same politicians say, we must protect their First Amendment rights. It's led to what could be tragic consequences for our region when you have an effort to eliminate one half of the Seattle Police Department. And then, as I talked about at noon today, and I want to get to the text messages here because hundreds of people texted me when I was talking about this new poll that's out. 62% of Americans are afraid to express their political beliefs in public. There is only one group on the ideological spectrum that does not feel afraid to share their political beliefs. And that's the people who self-identified as strongly liberal, far left. They don't mind expressing their views because they're not going to get fired from their job for having those viewpoints. They're not going to be condemned by neighbors at the grocery store for those viewpoints. But everybody else, even the people who are somewhat liberal, moderates, somewhat conservative, very conservative, all said, majority said, that they do not dare share their political views in public. And so that's where we get back to the mob is winning. And they will go to the homes of council members who don't vote to defund the police by 50%. They will write vile messages and spray graffiti on the homes in an effort to terrorize their families. And that's why I say they are domestic terrorists. You know, and they are being characterized as peaceful protesters. The ones who are going to the two Seattle City Council members, the two of nine, who did not vote to defund the police by 50%. And they're trying to intimidate them and get them to vote and think the way the mob demands. And they're doing it by going to their homes, spray painting graffiti, writing messages on their home doors and windows, terrorizing their families. And when you're using, you know, going to people's homes, and ideologically, I don't have a lot to agree with those two Seattle City Council members, but I do not think that their homes and their families should be terrorized in an effort to get them to comply with radicals. And over 100 texts on that subject, and 90% said you do not feel free to express your political views because of what happens on Facebook, in the neighborhood, in the workplace. A lot of government employees. Oh, lots of government employees. And you're taking a chance just by listening to my show, for crying out loud. Okay, let me take a quick time out here. Get to our awesome audio. Real thrill. Talked to John Cleese a couple of hours ago. That will make an appearance in awesome audio, which is coming up next. And down the stretch we come. What a day, what a show, what a show, what a day. And it is that time of the day when we like to count down our favorite sound bites of the day.
This is Doring Monson's Awesome Audio Clips of the Day.
As I mentioned, we have dueling press conferences this afternoon. President Trump is speaking right now. Jay Inslee is as well. We are monitoring both of those, and we'll have coverage throughout the afternoon for you here on Cairo Radio. For the president, first of all, for our nation, there was disastrous economic news today with the contraction of the economy, the worst in about 70 years, the worst quarter. Not surprised with the government-mandated economic shutdown. President Trump, a bit earlier today, he was talking about if we need more stimulus money for all of the unemployed in America, and he says that yeah, he still wants to keep sending out money to workers.
I'd like to see it be very high because I love the people. I want the people to get it. You know, the economy's going to come back. We just had tremendous job numbers, as you know, was just announced. We had great retail sales numbers. So this is all coming back. We had it close. We had the greatest economy we've ever had. We had to close it up because, you know, we had to do it. We saved millions of lives by doing that, but now we're bringing it back. And that's going to come back. We got to take care of the people in the meantime, and that's what we're doing.
But we can't keep going into debt. I mean, we need to. The Washington State Unemployment Office has been a disaster, and thousands still haven't gotten paid. The Nigerian scammers have gotten paid, but the taxpaying citizens of our state who are out of work have not. But as a nation, we're $24 trillion in debt. And that doesn't count the unfunded liabilities, which is about $50 trillion. And nothing is going to more surely lead to our ruin as a nation, more than coronavirus, more than China or North Korea or any other superpower. Nothing's going to lead to our demise like our nation's debt. And yes, we got to help out people, but we can't just keep printing money. We absolutely cannot do it. Then on the other side of the ticket, you got Joe Biden, who came out of his basement, didn't seem to know where he was, said he was in the wrong place, tried to dismiss it as a joke, and somebody edited out some of the other, or edited together some of his other stumbles. But here was Joe Biden earlier today.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Kingswood Community Center. Actually, that's the one down I used to work as a joke.
You know where we were anyway. it's great to be here and back at a place where, you know,
okay, that's added, Ed.
Come operating on. Out of home, all this stuff about hiding in the basement. over 340 million people have watched what we've done like this on television. That's as big as the American population.
340 million people have watched his stuff out of his basement? It's like a Taylor Swift video on YouTube. I don't think so. Okay, and finally, a couple of hours ago, John Cleese, the comedy icon from Monty Python, he's 80 years old. He is doing a worldwide live stream show on Sunday. And from London, John Cleese joined the Dory Monson Show. I enjoyed the heck out of it. John, why is there no hope?
Well, there's no hope that we will ever live in a sensible, intelligent, kind, well-organized society. Okay. It just isn't going to happen. But that doesn't mean that we can't live happy, joyful, fulfilling lives within that context. But I don't know if you know the Serenity Prayer, which is the sort of motto of the Alcoholics Anonymous. Sure. Do you know it?
Oh, yes.
If you God give us the courage to change things we can change, and the patience to put up with things we can't change, and the wisdom to tell the difference. And that's lovely. And all I'm saying is there's a lot we can't change, mainly because as you look around the world, you see that very rich and powerful people are in charge, and most of them are I'm not going to say all of them, but a very high percentage. And it's almost an entirely male business. I'm almost all male. There is one female. I cannot remember.
Well, I've heard you talk about a couple of your ex-wives in that context, haven't I? I heard you.
Well, yeah, well, the one who skinned me for 20 million, 20 million. I mean, that she was. She was a real. Yes, so there's two female. Okay. But the other 99.99% are males who have more money than they can ever spend but still want more, and who want power for the sole purpose of hanging on to it. I mean, once people have power, the only thing they want is not to lose the power. Why is that? Because they want to be able to control people. Why is that? Normally because they can't control their own emotions, so they have to control other people. I wrote a couple of books with a psychiatrist, and he said to me, if you can't control your own emotions, you have to control other people's behavior. And I think that is a deeply, deeply helpful way of looking at this.
I love talking to him. And he spent the whole half hour with us from 12:30 to 1 o'clock. So if you want to hear the entire interview with John Cleese, it was really fun. Go check out our podcast. We post them right after we get off the air. Go to mynorthwest.com for anything you might have missed. And let's face it, if you miss a minute of the show, you've really missed out. Tom and Curly are coming up next. God bless you in these crazy times. And I will see you back here tomorrow. High noon.
And up. I'm not even supposed to be here today.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.